give us about 15 seconds?
That would be 3. Good evening. Welcome to the March 2019 meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Health Commission. The first agenda item this evening is to approve our minutes from our last meeting. We do have one correction that has been noted. It was Commissioner Warren, I think, on the last page of the minutes that reported about the HEP grant, not Commissioner Ship. Are there any other corrections or additions? If not, we'll ask Teresa to get them published on our website, as she always does. This is the part of our agenda where we will invite people to make public comment. If there's anyone in the audience that desires to speak on any issues other than what's on our scheduled agenda items this evening and are within the scope of the interest of the Health Commission. Seeing no one come forward, we're going to launch right into our program this evening. This is a program that we have been wanting to do for quite some time, and I will ask Candace to introduce our speakers, please.
Great. Thank you. We're so excited to have you all here today. This was the top of our list of things that we wanted to hear about. So we have 3 great presentations today on mental health, mental well-being, and suicide prevention. I think what we're going to do is do all 3 presentations and take questions after, if that's okay, as a group. So first we'll have Megan Alvarez from Transitions Mental Health Association talking about outreach and education. Then we'll have Anna O'Sullivan and Carrie Mahoney present about their organization, Connect Be Well, and some events around teen mental health and suicide prevention. And then we have Alicia Hendry, brand new suicide prevention coordinator with the county, talking about the county programs. Thank you. Oh, good. Okay.
Looks like, am I going to point at Teresa? Telepathically.
Oh, I'm going to need to pull that up. I always have to take a little bit of a breath when there's technology involved. So I'm Megan Boaz Alvarez. I'm the Clinical Director for Transitions Mental Health Association, and I'm delighted to be here this evening to share some of our outreach and education programs that we have active in the community in San Luis Obispo and also in Santa Barbara County. So that is what I will be speaking about. And with that, I think I'll just launch into it. So first, I'd like to talk about our community outreach and education programs. And we are working on a couple of things that tie in with suicide prevention, but also general mental health education. So I'll talk about both this evening. One of the programs we're doing is Question, Persuade, and Refer, or QPR. And it is a 60 to 90 minute suicide prevention program. It's really kind of like first aid for suicide prevention. I'm an instructor for QPR. I'm also an instructor for our more detailed curriculum, which is a 2-day program. And the QPR class I would really compare to taking CPR and first aid so that you could kind of provide basic assistance and get somebody to more professional medical help, except for a suicide crisis. So that's what that training is about. It's considered a best practice for suicide prevention. And our county contract supports four classes a year, so we're really happy to be partnering with San Luis Obispo County on that. And our hotline supervisor is one of our instructors, and we have several other instructors, including myself, in-house, who provide these classes for the community. Additionally, in this past year, we received some private grant funds, and with those funds, we were able to host a tea for tea. So we had a class where we trained 30 people to also become QPR instructors, and basically to just really beef up the number of instructors we have in our county who can offer this training to the community. It's been a great fit for educators. It only takes 60 to 90 minutes. It fits into a staff meeting. In fall of 2017, we were able to train all of the SLO high school staff, which I thought was really great. I've worked in this county for about 3.5 years, and I worked in Kern County prior to that, and I can tell you it took us a long time to get into the school system, and to have a partnership like we've been able to establish here is kind of ahead of the game, quite frankly, in terms of where other schools and school districts are at for mental health education or suicide prevention. We're kind of ahead of the curve here, which it's really nice to have the opportunity to be part of that partnership. About 168 high school students have been trained in QPR, and then hundreds of community members have been trained in QPR in the last few years. And you're welcome to ask me questions anywhere along the way. So please do, if you have them. And I just wanted to share a snapshot of what this... Whoops. Okay, the slides are going to take off without me. So this is one of the slides from the curriculum. And basically, you can see, you're going to have to look quickly because apparently it's going to go no matter what I do. So it teaches people how to ask directly about suicide and increases people's comfort level with that. I did test this, but I was merging a couple of different versions of PowerPoint, so it looks like it's keeping the transition, so I apologize for that. So they're basic helper skills, and it's hard for people to say the word suicide. It's hard for people to ask the question, are you thinking about killing yourself? And basically that 90-minute workshop supports people in building those skills. So if we had seen that slide, that's what was on that. Applied Suicide Intervention Skills Training is another training that we offer. It is a 2-day intensive suicide intervention course. We actually just completed one of these. We taught one Friday and Saturday at Transitions Mental Health. It is considered a best practice. It's an evidence-based training, which means there's some research and data that supports the efficacy of the curriculum, and there's good data that shows that people that take this class are much more comfortable intervening when somebody's at risk of suicide and doing an intervention. So the training's designed for anybody. It's actually widely used in Canada. It's required by the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline Centers. It's the gold standard in suicide intervention. So it's not intended just for mental health professionals. It's intended for anyone because it takes 2 full days. We largely have mental health professionals or hotline volunteers, sometimes educators or school counselors who are taking those 2 days away from their regular duties to complete that 2-day class. And we offer that twice a year. And we offer it at what it costs us. So typically that class is between $400 and $500. Transitions offers it for $200 just to cover our expenses and to encourage other people in the community to take advantage of that and get that more advanced training. We require it for all of our hotline workers and volunteers, and we've trained about 65 people in the last year. So this is a slide from that training, which I hope will stay on your screen at least for a moment so you can take a look at it. And I just wanted you to see a snapshot of the kinds of things that we talk about in the class. We talk about what kind of physical warning signs there might be for somebody who's thinking about suicide. We talk about emotional signs or feelings. We talk about things people might say if they were considering suicide, and also some of the actions that can be flags. So this is an intensive 2-day training. There's a lot of subject matter that's covered, and then the second half of the second day is really practicing how to ask, what to say, how to provide support, and how to get somebody linked to somebody who can provide kind of ongoing care. Our high school program is relatively new for us. It's been going for about 18 months, and we are partnering with 16 middle schools and high schools in San Luis Obispo and also northern Santa Barbara County. Again, I'm very excited about this. It was really hard to get into the schools in Kern County. It was very much reactive. It was after there were several students lost to suicide that they invited us to come onto campus. And so to have this proactive partnership with our local school districts is just really exciting. So in the health classes, we have staff who are coming in doing a training called New Perspectives. It is a mental health education curriculum that's really designed to provide basic knowledge about mental health and also take a look at mental health in a health context and try to decrease some of the stigma around mental health issues and take a look at depression, anxiety, stress, thoughts about suicide, and look at those things as just part of overall health and not look at them as something that we don't talk about and really have open conversations. Some student leaders have been trained in QPR as well. That's that question, persuade, and refer, the suicide gatekeeper training. And 2,600 students have participated in the New Perspectives general mental health curriculum. And I wanted to share a little bit of that with you. So here are a couple of slides from the curriculum. This one really introduces the purpose of it. Suicide prevention is one of them. Raising awareness of mental health issues is one. Promoting self-care and just kind of focusing on wellness is also one of the key pieces. Learning about local resources. And the other thing is learning about how to help a friend or a loved one. And had my own experience with this last year. My daughter's a child at Los Osos Middle School, and she had a friend who had expressed some thoughts about suicide. And because that's dinner table talk at my house, she knew what to do. But it was interesting. I think this curriculum is a factor in kids being willing to let somebody know that they're having thoughts like that and what was going on. And because of some of this education, she knew, okay, I can't promise to keep it a secret. We have to identify an adult that we trust who can help us with this. And that's exactly what they did. And they were able to get this kid connected and get some help. Some of the clips that are used are produced by American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. They come from a curriculum called More Than Sad. And I wanted to share one of the clips just so you can kind of have a snapshot of what the curriculum looks like. They're vignettes. They're, I think, pretty relatable for students. The clip you're going to see is a young man who's struggling, who's kind of a high achiever, which is a population that isn't always identified as maybe being at risk, but actually can be a population with higher risk. So hopefully my clip works, and we'll get to take a look at that. Teresa, can you click on it with the mouse? Just click in the middle of the black screen. It should just go. So it may be that you might be grabbing the push for a moment. Sorry, if it doesn't work, I will want to. I won't take up time trying to get it to, but I just thought. I can actually just pull it from YouTube.
Definitely, yes.
Okay. Are we okay time-wise, though? It's about a 90-second clip. I just want to make sure. So if we can just close that out. Going to be a different kit, but it's still the curriculum that we're using.
Are you sleeping? It's the middle of the day. Is everything all right?
Yeah, I'm just tired.
Ooh, can you see that? You can see the nurse. Okay.
Your teacher, she said you've been missing school. And when you do show up, you often seem unprepared. Lana, that's so unlike you. What's going on? You've always been such a good student. Lana, what's the matter? Baby, can you talk to me? You want to get up? Go Come down, have something to eat with me?
Stop, just stop.
You know what? You need to snap out of it. Stop feeling sorry for yourself.
Sometimes parents don't know what to do or how to help when you're depressed. They may misread the situation and say or do things that aren't helpful. Usually it's out of concern or fear.
So there's a series of clips that are kind of along those lines, and they basically show what depression might look like. There's a young man who's very aggressive and agitated, which can also be an indicator for depression.
You know, you don't need there's no people making power for acting points. That's the thing of the past. If you want to keep yourself
cool. So now I've ensured I will never be invited back to the health board. And he just won't stop talking. So I did want you to see one of the clips that we're using for the program. Is there a way to mute it?
The people who fought for our freedom were not cops.
Back to our regularly scheduled program. So that's one of the clips, and it gives you an idea of what those clips look like. And really, the intent is to normalize the experience of depression. Something like 1 out of 4 people are experiencing a mental health issue at any given time. That's a lot of people. If you think about the average high school or middle school classroom, that's a handful of kids in the room. And the idea of this curriculum is to show them somebody who might look like them, who might be struggling with some of the same things that they're struggling with, and maybe they'll recognize, like, hey, I feel like that some days. I have days where I feel like I can't get out of bed, and my mom says, snap out of it. And that's truly not what's happening. Depression's biological. So education around those things so students recognize this might be happening to me, and if it is, I need to get some help with it. So that's the intent with that high school education program. The last thing I wanted to touch on just briefly is our SLO suicide hotline, and that is a 24-hour service. Partly funded by San Luis Obispo County, also partly by Santa Barbara County. It's crisis support, suicide intervention. We also offer coping skills support and referrals to community resources. So it's a great 24-hour resource staffed by a small number of paid staff and then a large number of really fantastic volunteers. We had a group of volunteers in the recent class, mostly Cal Poly students, and they're just amazing. They're going to be great volunteers. I left the clicker when I wandered off trying to stop the... There it is. So that's just a quick snapshot of what our call data looks like and the number of calls to date. So it's a breakdown, you can see by county. And some stats on, so there's the total number of calls from San Luis Obispo County. It's about 4,000. About 10% of those calls are suicide calls. Total number of calls so far this year, around 7,000, and we're anticipating probably we'll hit 10,000 calls this year. So it's a very active service, providing a lot of support to the community. In terms of the marketing, thousands of hotline cards and posters are distributed every year. They're all over the middle school and high school campuses, also at, that should be Cal Poly, and Cuesta. We also do a lot of community health fairs and events just to get the word out there about SLO Hotline. And then this is kind of exciting. We partnered with Ralph's Pharmacy, and there will be 36,000 prescription bags that are printed with the hotline information. Nice thing about that is those bags have a higher chance of reaching the middle-aged adult and older adult population, which may not be at a community health fair or a campus event or some of these other areas where we have a bigger footprint in terms of our outreach. So this will help us to reach a different population, and those are populations that have an elevated risk of dying by suicide and have higher suicide rates. So we're excited to have that partnership with Ralph's Pharmacy. Just signed off on the proof for the printing, so it's something coming up a little bit later in the spring. And I'm going to invite you all to ask me questions now. I have kids at dance class in Santa Maria, and I will have to go get them immediately afterwards. So happy to answer questions if anybody has them.
Any questions? We'll start down. Catherine?
Could you talk a little bit about how difficult it was to get into the schools, and when did you first start approaching the schools?
So we have a grant writer who works for us, and there was a request for proposals for, I'm not going to remember the foundation's name. I apologize. It's in a different division. I can't. Fairbanks. Yes, I do. It's the Fairbanks Foundation. And I think it had a youth focus. And so we specifically crafted a grant asking to do this. And so two things happened at the same time. About 2 years ago, the state of California passed a new piece of legislation that actually requires middle schools and high schools to have some basic suicide prevention education for their staff. So the schools had this new requirement roll out, and Transitions Mental Health, thanks to this grant, was able to say, hey, would you like this for free? We'll come and train your staff. And because they had the new requirement, it was kind of a win-win situation. We were able to meet their need. We offer another training called Mental Health First Aid. It takes about 8 hours, but having the QPR training that could really fit into a regular staff meeting, I think, was also an advantage.
And so when you got pushback from the schools, what was that? What was that about?
We didn't get pushback from schools in this county. When I worked in Kern County, we had done the same kinds of outreach. American Foundation for Suicide Prevention had purchased this More Than Sad curriculum for us. We offered it for free. We offered our staff as instructors. And it probably took about 3 years for them to say, okay, you can start coming to some health classes. And unfortunately, it was after a couple of deaths by suicide. So it was a very different experience in this county, I think partly because state legislation had passed and they were going to have to do it either way. But it was nice to be able to show up and say, hey, we have instructors, we have a training, would you like this longer one or this shorter one? And by the way, it's free. Made it a little easier.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks so much for your presentation. I'm going to ask some selfish questions. I teach at Cal Poly.
Okay.
And I wonder... I'm sure that there's kind of a parallel training that they do at Cal Poly. Yeah, do you know?
Around mental health?
Yes.
I don't know if they're, not to my knowledge. We do have some partner friends at Cal Poly. And I know that they do during WOW Week. I think SLO Hotline's included in WOW Week, like just covering the resources that are available.
Right.
But in terms of a curriculum that covers mental health issues, if you're not taking psychology classes, I'm not sure that would be covered.
Yeah, I think that the Student Peer Health Group does some trainings, and I know that they do some things for WOW, and it looks like Anna and Carrie have some information they can probably share with us in a second.
Okay.
But I wonder, I'm even more selfishly thinking for staff and faculty. We're often frontline with students that are coming in that are quite troubled.
Absolutely.
And especially, so we just hired a bunch of new faculty in my department, for example, and it would be really great to have a short training for those new faculty. And I wonder if, like, you are an appropriate organization or whether
there's
a better...
I'd be delighted personally to come and do a QPR class. If you have staff that would like to take it, we can fit it into 60 minutes. And it's a nice, basic, bare-bones gatekeeper training. What to look for, how to recognize somebody's in trouble, how to ask, and how to get them connected.
That's perfect.
You have to do that.
Yeah. What's your ideal group size? Do you have a...
You know, I've trained groups as large as 150.
Wow.
So it's pretty open.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Your last slide, or maybe the next to last, that showed some data on the number of calls related to suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Did I hear you say those numbers are year to date?
Those numbers are year to date. Yes, so that we start, that's the fiscal year, so starting July 1st. So
fiscal year, okay.
Somewhere around 7,000 to 8,000 calls and about, am I remembering my numbers right? Yes, it's in the 7,000 range, and I think our suicide calls are around 400 for the year.
That's a little better. I was thinking it was 10 weeks worth of data.
No, I'm sorry. Fiscal year. We think it, yes. Our contracts are funded by fiscal year, so that's the way my brain works.
Thank you.
Sure.
I was wondering, do you have a program for the Hispanic population?
QPR is available in Spanish. We do have one Spanish-speaking instructor, so we have that available as well.
Thank you.
Just to piggyback off of the data question, you said you were on track to have received around 10,000 calls so far this year.
We've received around between 7 and 8,000 calls this year. I think it's close to 7, and we expect
by the end of
10,000 by the end of June.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Hi. So the slow hotline, whenever we actually deal with the patients who are depressed, anxiety, suicide ideation, etc., besides we refer them to mental health, we provide them with this hotline number. So SLO hotline, as well as the Santa Barbara's hotline number, mm-hmm. National Suicide Hotline. Mm-hmm. Now, I know the SLO hotline does more than just suicide prevention.
Correct.
Right. Mm-hmm. But if someone is really thinking about committing suicide, and that's what we are most concerned with. They are high risk for suicide, but they are not going to be, they are not actually right away dangerous. So,
okay.
College is not going to
take them away. Hospitalized.
Exactly, right. So, what number is the best number to call? National Suicide Hotline or SLO Hotline?
So, I came from a center where we were both. We were the local hotline, and we were also the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. The nice thing about the SLO hotline is that they'll get somebody who knows the resources here locally, and they'll know who's open right now. They'll know how to get a hold of mobile crisis in this county. They'll know how to get an urgent response if that's what's needed. If it's a client that we're already providing services for, they may have their information. They may be able to get a hold of a case manager or somebody else who can respond after hours who actually knows the client. So I would give both. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline and actually our local SLO hotline have the same training that's required, that two-day assist class. So either way, it'll be somebody who's skilled in doing a suicide risk assessment and doing a really supportive suicide intervention. But I think resource-wise, I think I would lean towards giving the SLO hotline. But I would always give both.
Thank you.
One more question, sorry. Going back to the call data. Mm-hmm. What do the demographics look like in terms of the age range, mostly age range, but gender or any other or cultural demographics that you might collect?
So we actually do collect a great deal of demographic data. We're part of a statewide partnership where we look at call data for all of these different crisis lines. And I will confess that the hotline has been under me for about 3 weeks. So it is new to me. I could pull that data and I'd be happy to do a follow-up and send it to you. It's not data that I know off the top of my head. I think we tend to get calls more from younger adults versus older adults. I don't believe we have a high volume of calls from older adults. But other than that, I'm not going to be able to give you specifics. But I'd be happy to do a follow-up and share that information.
Thank you. Yeah, I would venture to guess that how each volunteer who answers the line may have a slightly different approach based on age and other demographics in terms of how they may be able to connect and relate with that person on the other end of the line. So I was just curious to see what that breakdown might be and what, that approaches would vary. So especially if word gets out as you print out the Ralph's prescription cards for the older population, mm-hmm. to be able to see how that may shift.
I think you're right. I think we do have different approaches, and we also are kind of our two populations are Cal Poly students and then retirees seem to be our volunteers. So I feel like we're well prepared for that older adult population, but we'll see we'll see if we notice an uptick in calls from that population. That's what I'm hoping to see. But of course, we're just in the beginning stages of that, so we won't know yet.
Just one more quick question. Language. So if someone called this SLO hotline, and let's say they are Spanish-speaking mm-hmm. person, do you have a Spanish-speaking person who can actually converse with them, or do you get AT&T translation?
We have to rely on the language line. We do have a small number of Spanish-speaking volunteers, but we don't have enough. We often have only two people covering at a time, mm-hmm. and we don't have enough people who are Spanish-speaking to have a Spanish-speaking person available all the time. So we do rely on the language line. Thank you so much for having me this evening.
So, Carrie and Anna?
I'm going to stand over there so you don't fly.
Okay. Here.
Oh, there is a clock. There's a clock. Okay. And then Teresa's going to put up our slides. Thank you so much. Well, I will start. I'm Anna O'Sullivan.
And I'm Carrie Mahoney.
And we are here to talk about well-being. Sorry. Is that better? Yeah, so I'm Anna O'Sullivan. This is Carrie Mahoney. And we are the creators of Mindful Slow and Reach Club at the high school, Slow High School, and the founders of Connect Be Well, which is our website as well, connectbewell.org. I also, a little background, got my doctorate at UCSB. I was trained as an educational psychologist and then went to the Midwest to teach for 15 years in a small liberal arts college. And I taught in a teacher education program, so I taught future elementary teachers. So aside from having been a teacher and a professor, I am a mom of three. And we relocated in 2012 when my husband took a job at Cal Poly. And when I transitioned, transitioned our family here, I decided to not get a job right away and help my three kids who were then going into third grade, going into sixth grade, and going into eighth grade, transition and figure out life for them here because, as you know, those can be tricky ages to uproot a whole family.
My name's Carrie Mahoney, and I am, I guess, I came back to San Luis Obispo. I went to Cal Poly. Psychology and human development, developmental psych was my focus. Got married here, had my first jobs with the Economic Opportunity Commission years ago, and then my husband and I had to kind of move away and try some new areas just professionally, and we had the opportunity to come back 6 years ago. So I've done a lot of work with peer counseling, training. I've volunteered numerous times within the school districts through site council, and I've also been a business owner with my husband and had the opportunity to come back here to San Luis Obispo, and that's where I met Anna.
Yes, and we were two involved parents at the middle school. Our daughters and their shared activities really helped. I think helped us become friends. Next slide, please. Oh, sorry. So, yes, we are thankful for all of you that are here and the work that you do in our community because we truly believe that it takes a village or community to raise a child. And when you're a newcomer, that is, I think, especially apparent. So we started out working together with Mindful Slow, but if you'll go to the next slide, please. The reason we're here and the reason why this work started was not on anything that we may have planned, but my oldest son struggled since ninth grade with what became familiar as anxiety and depression, but initially did not manifest as that at all. In fact, the woman in the video clip that Megan shared was my son. And because he couldn't get out of bed, we went to family therapy so my husband and I could learn, one, get on the same page and learn what he needed that we could provide, because having always worked with children my whole life, I was at a loss. That led us to, after months, that led us to seeing a psychiatrist who luckily also did talk therapy. So my son was able to walk after high school to his appointments. We engaged him. We said, this is something that you need to work on, and we're here to support you, but it's really something that we felt he needed to take responsibility for his own health and well-being. Unfortunately, after 2.5 years of getting him the support we thought we were providing, we realized that the school and his peer group also play a role in this learning how to take care of yourself and learning how to manage your own health and well-being, right? You as a parent know you can say all the right things, but it takes, you know, somebody on social media, somebody at school, a well-meaning teacher who says the wrong thing can really outweigh what you do at home. So the Sunday before finals week, our son, Tomas, took his life. I was at home, and Carrie was with me. So immediately at that point, I thought, you know, sort of become the researcher, the investigator. We went over and over again, my husband and I, what did we not do? What did we get wrong? Who did we not talk to? What did we not know? And with Carrie's friendship and support through this, we opened our laptops on our kitchen island and thought, what in the school website did I miss? What resources did we not tap into? What about the district website? What about the county? Somebody said, well, did you ever go to Transitions Mental Health? Nobody told us about Transitions Mental Health. We had health insurance. We went to the pediatrician. We got referrals. We were in counseling. We were making sure that he slept, like not kept, you know, unusual hours. We made sure that he ate. We made sure that in addition to taking medicine, that he was connected to a peer group. He was a very active member in band. We supported relationships. We thought we had done all that we could. So this began our journey of just trying to figure out what did we miss. And then finding out there was a lot that was not there. And so our programs have been informed by our lived experience, our professional experience, and also community needs. Because after you lose a child to suicide and you speak about it, which realize that this was before 13 Reasons Why and a lot of things that put sort of suicide in the national map, we had people coming up to us saying, I have a Tomas, or I'm married to a Tomas. And we realized then that the work that I was doing on my own and then the work that we were doing together wasn't just for my son. It was for the many kids who struggle with anxiety and depression that we know has been on the rise. And what those parents needed resources that we were finding. Those parents needed other parents to talk with at a time where I didn't have anybody. Carrie would have been there, but there were things that I thought, well, as a 16-year-old, this is his issue. It's for him to choose who he talks about. And I was very careful about who I shared his own private struggles with. But I knew it wasn't something that parents were talking about at school events in the ways that they are now.
And I think there was one thing Anna said. It wasn't that well-meaning. I know that our counselors at our high school, and we both have children at Slo-High and have had children at Slo-High, they were so amazing being there for Anna and Patrick. But what we noticed beginning our research is we had so many amazing resources here in San Luis Obispo County, but it was hard bringing them together. It was hard to know who fit what. And being the way they both had insurance, and many of the services are geared for a smaller percentage, which we need to have for whether they're homeless, whether people might not have insurance. But for Anna and Patrick, they kind of fell through this interesting crack. And so we decided it wasn't about pointing fingers on what wasn't there for Tomas. It was finding solutions on how we could meet the needs of people like Tomas and parents and community members like Anna and Patrick. So we began our research literally within months of losing Tomas. And Patrick, who is Anna's husband, who is at Cal Poly, and he ended up finding some really amazing research done from Harvard, Making Caring Common, and it's from the Harvard School, the Graduate School of Education. And they'd been working for over the last 10 years on Making Caring Common, and they noticed that many of their first-time freshmen at Harvard were very different. They'd been changing over the last decade. And the things they were seeing is these kids were amazing on paper, accomplished, amazing. Mm-hmm. But these beautiful beings get to this dream school that they've wanted to attend, and all of a sudden they start struggling, whether it be maybe they're not going to be getting the A's that they want, maybe they're struggling socially, maybe they are realizing this isn't the end-all perfect pathway, like somehow this isn't, like, I'm not there yet. I still have, am struggling. So Richard Weisbord is one of the founding creators of this research at Harvard. He also is the one who, at the time, right during the week we were speaking with him, had just been kind of mentoring the Obamas with Malia taking a gap year. Because how important it is for us to really work with our students and our kids about finding out what they're about, taking the time to really know what they're about and their purpose before they begin. So he sent us on our path, and he says, first and foremost, you need to work organically within your community. We can have amazing programs. We could have mental health first aid. We can have QPR, which are so important. But to meet those needs of those programs, we also need to come up from below. Like, what is it that San Luis Obispo is needing? What is it that our high school is needing? Let's work directly with our counselors. So that's kind of how we started. And here is a really important quote. Helping students become emotionally literate does not distract from academic achievement, but is a catalyst for it. Students with interpersonal understanding develop into more sophisticated readers, writers, and critical thinkers. So what we can do by boosting up our own well-being, which is social emotional learning, is going to boost academic rigor and performance. And that's where what schools are needing. Mm-hmm. So here we go. This is what we have, our research is showing.
One of the things that that we realized early in our work is that families can do what they do. Schools can do what they do. And students and their peer culture can do what they do with what they know and what they've experienced. But if you're not working together, trying to create a common language or even talking about the similar issues in a collaborative, coordinated or intentional way, you don't really reach the full potential of any program. Mm-hmm. So we did take a systems approach, and we started talking with parents, and we started talking with teachers and counselors that we knew.
Across the nation and locally. Mm-hmm. So we've been combining both national and international research along with just finding out what mm-hmm. the needs were within our community.
And one of the things that we did early on that was part of our healing was we were learning about mindfulness and learned about a program called Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction for Teens. And we worked with Gina Beagle. We signed up for her internet 10-week class, and we got certified to do Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction for Teens. And mindfulness was really a key to our healing from loss. But we also realized with some of the kids, our own daughters, who were at the freshman when Tomas took his life, that it helped them in times of stress. It helped them to know that whatever I'm feeling right now is temporary. And if I focus on my breath for even 30 seconds, or if I focus on that negative thought and change it to a positive thought in 12 seconds, I can change my mindset. So mindful slow came from the work that we were doing at that period of time. But we realized that mindful slow was specific to our community. And really, we were realizing through the course that we were taking online with people from Australia and England that, it's not just your teens that are struggling and slow. this is a problem for our teens. This is a problem for our parents. So we realize it's beyond slow, and that's where we started.
And mindfulness is only, what we realize too, is only one way to cope. So we started really realizing what is it that we're needing, and what we're really needing is social emotional learning, which social emotional learning is in many states across our nation is integrated all through the curriculum. Well, one thing we realized is we don't have that here in San Luis Obispo County. And we're thinking, gosh, okay. So we started doing our research with the Department of Education through the state of California. Then we started looking nationally. And through ESSA, which now took the, you know, Every Student Succeeds Act, there's funding in there for social-emotional learning. So then we started asking lots of questions like, are we writing for these within our school district? But that takes manpower. It takes an understanding of, is that going to take away from our academic performance? How do we integrate it? So then we are all about relationships, and we are all about saying, how can we make this work and do this the way we can do it now by not having the programs integrated yet? How can we introduce it? So we've started little piloting programs that we've been doing within our district, and the first was Reach Club. We started Reach Club in the fall of 2016. We lost Tomas.
Sorry.
We lost Tomas February 28th of 2016, and we kind of started piloting a program of Reach in the fall. And it was the counselors at SLO High and ourselves. We wanted a program that all students would feel welcome to, but it was a program that would begin introducing social-emotional skills in a very fun, kind of happy way. Because our research realized that to really give outwardly, and which Harvard has discovered and which we're discovering, we're so great at doing things for other people. But before we do things for other people, we really kind of need to know what we're about internally. So Reach, we named Reach being Reach Within and Reach Out. So our Reach Club has started doing some amazing things, which I think some of you might have seen. The Today Show even came to highlight some of the things we're doing here in San Luis Obispo. But we can't just take Reach and put it anywhere. Like, a lot of times it's very easy, especially in an educational system, to say, give me your curriculum and let me put it in this school, in this school. And what Anna and I are saying is, gosh, we want anybody to have this curriculum, but we want to make sure that we build the program around what works at your site and your school.
And based on what's already there, so this year the school district has asked us to reach beyond SLO High, where we've been piloting. We have Reach Club starting at Morro Bay High School, and Reach Club starting at Laguna, and soon, probably early fall next year, with at Loams. But we realize that Morro Bay's student population and the programs they already have are different than SLO High, even though it's the same district. So Morro Bay's ASB, Associated Student Body, they do a lot more with mental health awareness than SLO High's ASB did. And they, Morro Bay also had a kindness club that had just started. So the advisor we were working with didn't want to step on toes. So we've been really working within each school system to figure out, well, what do you want Reach to look at on your campus?
And one thing I think that's really important that we address is what the transitions is doing is fabulous and so important. And what County Behavioral Health is doing is so important. What Cal Poly's trying to do with Active Minds and with the Counseling Center, it's amazing. And so we've been working with everyone as how can we all work just as do all the wonderful things we're doing, but how can we do it better? Mm-hmm. And how can we understand how each of us are doing things? Mm-hmm. Anna and I are just Anna and I. We've been trying to bringing everything in, because the social emotional well-being of all of us, whether it's the adults or the kids, mm-hmm. is first and foremost. When we work on that, it helps for the drug and alcohol. It helps for the Friday Night Live that's on campuses. We're addressing, because alcohol and drug addiction, and it all begins with someone struggling, not being able to identify their emotions, mm-hmm. not being able to identify their own coping skills, mm-hmm. to find their own balance.
And, you know, our preschool teachers and elementary teachers do know the importance of social-emotional learning, and they have those kids all day. They create that classroom environment with those kids. But adolescence is a pivotal time in a person's life. And our feeling, our research has affirmed what our thoughts all along is, where do kids who are teenagers soon to launch to their next step, whatever that may be, learn about self-awareness and self-management and social awareness, especially at a time when social media is what it is in their lives? Where do they learn responsible decision-making? Where do they build those relationship skills to be the roommate, to be the friend who calls the hotline or calls to say, I'm worried about somebody? Where do they get those skills? And so the work that we've done at a club level, which we hope at some point will become a part of the curriculum and across the curriculum, it's not one teacher, one department's area to focus on, but I think we all need to be informed and aware and know signs and be able to be that trusted adult in a person's life to say, hey, are you okay? Or I missed you yesterday.
And part of the career pathways, career readiness and technical readiness, which our school district and many of the school districts around are, it's so important our kids know about the options for what they can do after high school. What are their gifts? What's their purpose? And we believe identifying who they are helps them identify how amazing they are and unique and what they want to do. So REACH is welcoming to all students, whether it's FFA, band, ASB, everybody can build their well-being muscles. And by doing that, it also helps, by building who we are, it also helps when we reach out within the community. So here's an idea of our REACH Club curriculum, which we have designed based on the five competencies from CASEL, which is the social-emotional learning. Here's an example, and advisors are... Our counseling department is overseas as advisors, and then we have staff on campus. Here's, they have activities. They possibly will do learn about depression or anxiety, such as we had Alicia Hendry in. We did a depression panel, anxiety, and then we had activities.
And it is student-driven. Every year the students really get to write down what and brainstorm together collectively what are they interested in doing, not just for learning for themselves, but the kind of programming they do for the whole school community. Mm-hmm. So this week they kicked off their Kindness Month with kindness activities.
This is just kind of a little snapshot of all the different things. The kindness cards, for example, our collaboration that we're doing, Take Five at Cal Poly is a phenomenal program. They've been doing that for 10 years. Connie Legal at Kennedy Library has therapy dogs. They do kindness cards, Watercolor Wednesday, and they have worked with us, and we're like, why, how wonderful, let's do these same programs with our students. So now we're sharing different programs, saying this is what's working here, this is what you guys might want to try it at Cal Poly. You can get an example. We even the simplest things on post-it notes on Take What You Need, and those post-it notes up in the far right corner were gone within hours, and they're things such as you are enough, you got this, have a great day, and students are taking them.
And it said the kids wrote, take one or give one to a friend.
Right. The other thing we've done, which is very unique, is we started very early on writing to parents about all the research we were doing. Because we don't have answers, but we will research and offer resources. So we started writing in our principal's newsletter at Slo High in January of 2017. Since then, now we have 81 volumes of letters on such a variety of topics that we've chosen to be very transparent about. We've decided to open up how we're working through the loss of Tomas. And I think being there when Tomas took his life, I just believe as a human being,
the courage that Anna and Patrick have taken to say, we're not going to hide under the covers. We're going to take our professional and our personal love of people and of Tomas, and we're going to make a difference. For me, I'm going to make that happen for her. We're going to do anything we can to do this the way we should do it. So that's why we're here. So being vulnerable, we're going to be there. We're going to say, you know what? This is what I'm kind of struggling with. These are some things we just found, and these are some great programs. So we decided to start these letters. Well, a dream was to put them all resources on a website. Anna and I didn't even know about Google Drive till 3 years ago. So we even built our own website to put all these resources on. So our letters started. Now our letters are going throughout our whole school district, and we've adapted the letters for elementary school. And our dream is to also do letters for teachers, and it's because we all need to be seen.
Well, and it's really, you know, being a teacher, being a parent, being a human, I mean, it's a lifelong process of evolving. And now, thanks to the internet, we don't just have to read our local paper, but we can learn from other communities, other programs across the nation and the world. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we want to be informed and aware so that we can make decisions from that place.
And Anna and I believe relationships. Our children have this thing called this device that we're all learning a lot about. It is. It's the way the future is. But how we can learn to still talk about relationships and one-on-one. So we believe in collaborating. We believe in bringing everybody to the table. And our dream 3 years ago was, gosh, I would love to know what so-and-so does for transitions. I would love to know what this behavioral health does within the schools. So what we are doing is we are collaborating with county mental health. We're collaborating with transitions. We're collaborating with Cal Poly. We're collaborating with our counselors in our school. And we're putting together the first ever What We Wish Our Parents Understood. And we're going to see how this works. But so far, we've had such amazing response. Mm-hmm. Where we surveyed all 10th and 12th graders at Slo High, and the counselors really recommended us doing those age groups. And we offered them a choice of 15 things that they might really want their parents to know more about. We had over 1,600 responses. Mm-hmm. And so those three or four topics, we're going to have a student panel. And the students are going to be moderated by the counseling department, and they're going to just talk to all of us about how is it we can understand you better. We're going to have a break. We're going to have a huge resource kind of fair that's going to be put on by County Behavioral Health. And then the second half is we have some amazing professionals in our community that are working with our students and working with us as parents are going to sit on the panel and discuss those same topics, but how we as parents and community members can do a better job at understanding our kids and meeting their needs. So we are really excited about this, and so that's March 20th, and
that's our website.
That's our website, and if you guys are ever curious, you can go see just all the stuff we're doing. We have all the resources. We've put some of our letters on there. Our letters have been going out through Gina Beagle at Stress Teens, kind of all over. We are not savvy on any of this. We just are so happy because Dr. Prater, our superintendent of our district, made a wonderful assertion at the last board meeting. We are also focused on statistics, but there's so much more behind statistics. There's friendships. There's maybe something that's going on in someone's home that instead of if you have maybe 12 students that might be seen by an amazing professional during the week, there are hundreds of students that didn't have the courage to go to talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. So our programs that we're putting on work in collaboration with QPR, collaboration with mental health first aid, they're giving kids 100% of the population kind of their own armor. It's like, wait a minute, if I get a B on a test, I'm okay. That doesn't define who I am. Or if I'm struggling getting out of bed a little bit today, let's talk about this. You know what? I'm not alone. One of the things we've really been learning is so many kids, and we're just working with a wonderful family from Cal Poly, where this young woman, freshman, really was struggling with anxiety, had never had that before. She just all of a sudden identified that that was her. And just learning that anxiety is not you, it's just something that you're struggling with. And these are some things you can do. Your heart pounding isn't your heart failing on you. It's really your heart just giving you a warning sign just to say, slow down. You're amazing. You just...
And you're not the only one who really gets nervous public speaking. That's when she thought her heart was going to pound out of her chest.
Totally. So, and this was something in everything we're doing were things that we wanted Tomas to have and things that Anna and Patrick would have loved to have. We just want to start a conversation. And so this is the funny thing. We all are going to have muddy, messy days, right? And we all have to remember to enjoy the journey and not get a little overwhelmed by it and really connect. There's a funny story with this picture. So as we said, we've started using therapy dogs. That's our therapy dog we just got that we're working, training to bring to the school district from Anna and I. That's Lola, and a breeder locally gave us Lola. So Lola's reminding us every day to enjoy the journey.
And we leave you with what we all need as human beings, but especially kids, especially high school kids who some want to be invisible, some don't want to be there. They all need kindness and sense of belonging and compassion and feeling safe.
We thank you so much for having us, and thank you for letting us share about what we've been busy doing.
Thank you for being here. I'm sure we have a ton of questions. You don't have to leave, do you?
We don't have anybody in dance at Santa Maria.
No, but we'll let Alicia go, and
Then we'll have questions. Yeah.
Thank you. Alicia, do you want this over here? It has good juju.
There's that proper county logo up there.
All the way up on the top, Teresa, on the red new slideshow. And from the beginning. That's the only thing I know about.
All right. How's everybody doing? Some really great presentations. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Alicia Hendry, and I'm the Suicide Prevention Coordinator for the County of San Luis Obispo and their Behavioral Health Department and the Prevention and Outreach Division. It's been actually pretty nice coming up last. Working with our partners, it's been really great. So thank you for having us all here tonight. This topic's near and dear to my heart, to Carrie and Anna's as well, and Megan's as well, so thank you. So the County of San Luis Obispo, working together with Transitions Mental Health, established this position of the Suicide Prevention Coordinator about a year ago, and then I started in July. So it's a fairly new position to our county. There's been other counties have allocated suicide prevention coordinators, but it's still very unique to our population. So it is funded by Prop 63, so the Mental Health Services Act. For those in the audience that don't know about that, it was a voter. It was established by voters in 2004 and implemented in 2005. And there's a 1% tax on everybody that makes over $1 million in California, and that's allocated to the state and then trickled down to the different counties. So according to Mental Health Services Act, MHSA, the suicide prevention programs include public and targeted information campaigns, suicide prevention hotlines, and training and education. So we do have the SLO hotline. It's been established for more than 40 years. So that already existed in our county. So where my position's been focusing is on the training and education aspect. So what does this look like for SLO County? We have a suicide prevention council. It's been in existence for a little over 4 years, and I took that over as chair in July when I began. I also manage our new suicide prevention page for the county. So if you go under the Behavioral Health Department, it's kind of the hub of all the information that my position puts out. So any trainings, any sort of events that go on with my position, you can find there. Community partnerships, so incredibly valuable. It takes a village, as we know, and so it's been really, really rewarding, and I'm very honored to be in this position to create those community partnerships. The 7 through 12 school community is another position where we target with the suicide prevention, and then we do county trainings, so county employee trainings, outreach, and data. So I will proceed with each of these. So the Suicide Prevention Council, annually they've put out the Suicide Prevention Forum in October, and that was kind of their main reach. They met quarterly, a group of really great professionals from Transitions Mental Health, from Hospice, from Wilshire Hospice, Cal Poly, Cuesta, a lot of different organizations meet quarterly, kind of talk about what everyone's doing. They had the forum every year, and then that was about it. So I'm really excited to be the chair. We're meeting every fourth Wednesday now of the month and really getting a lot of great momentum. A lot more community members are coming, a lot more veterans and military associated individuals, and we've recently had some people from the faith-based community as well, so we're really expanding our reach, which is great. So we are going to continue with the annual Suicide Prevention Forum. It's going to be this year on October 2nd. We're bringing the S Word. It's a documentary film about suicide and suicide attempts and ideation, and it just kind of shows the real faces of people that experience suicide and suicide loss. So I'm really excited. Stay tuned for that. The Suicide Prevention Council is also a place for data sharing. So I've been working with Ann McDowell, our epidemiologist, gathering the suicide death data for about the past 12 years. And the purpose of this, which I'll get into in a little bit as well, is to really find, you know, targeted information. Who are people that are dying by suicide? Not just statistically, but where are they? Where are they working? You know, and who it affects and how we can prevent it in that sense. We're also working on a strategic plan for suicide prevention. And so the data-based information really helps with that as well. And then we have a couple subcommittees that have been established. One is for the older adult suicide prevention and also for eating disorder community, preventing suicide there as well. So community partnerships, here are just a few. So the SLO hotline and Transitions Mental Health. Transitions Mental Health is a full service partnership with the County of San Luis Obispo. So a lot of their programs and our programs are funded together. So that's been really nice with them. I've worked with Megan. I actually took the assist training back in July, and I was part of the train the trainer for QPR, so I'm also a gatekeeper and trainer for that now, which is great. The Veterans Health Task Force, it's out of the Vet Center and the collaborative there, so I attend those meetings as well. As you'll see later in the presentation, our veterans have a really high rate of suicide locally, so it's been nice getting to know them as well. They don't have a suicide prevention coordinator, so helping out with their prevention efforts has been really important. The Out for Mental Health Task Force really supports mental health needs for the LGBTQ+ community. As you'll see later as well, a lot of data, we don't collect death data for SOGI, so sexual orientation and gender identity. So this has been something that really impacts that community, not understanding, you know, the full reach of everything within them. So the Alpha Mental Health Task Force has been really beneficial as well. We're really great partners with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, AFSP. They have a couple members that sit on our council, and they do a lot of great work in our community as well. And then we have our Mindful Slow, Connect Be Well. We're really excited about our event next week. We've been planning that for a couple months now, so I'm looking forward to that. And then Each Mind Matters, it's a California organization, and it's also funded by Prop 63 or MHSA, and they have a lot of different data in different languages that are spoken here in California, culturally appropriate translations, and then a lot of information there as well, prevention-wise. So the 7 through 12 community, earlier Megan mentioned the law that mandates different trainings in schools, and that's the Assembly Bill 2246. And that mandates annual suicide prevention training for all staff. It requires strategic plan for suicide prevention and postvention, so what happens after a suicide. So the plan includes crisis intervention, having a media spokesperson, someone that's versed in suicide prevention language. You know, there are a lot of stigmatizing terms that sometimes people still use when it comes to suicide, and so trying to educate people through that and reporting properly so as to prevent contagion and also to respect the family's wishes. And so part of AB 2246 is training administration, so making sure that the strategic plan is up to date, that it's effective, efficient. It doesn't look the same for every school. As we learn, different schools need different things and have different populations. So part of my position moving forward, I came on a little bit late. I came on in the summer last year. So moving forward every year, checking in with every school district and making sure that their policy is up to date and appropriate as well. Faculty and educators. So QPR trainings, in addition to Transitions Mental Health and their high school education program, I'm also in the schools going out and doing QPR. And the QPR training is mandated every year or some sort of training. And so changing that, updating it, bringing in new data just so that people are continued to have be well-versed and up-to-date on the different language and statistics is also important. So that's been really fun. I'm a San Luis Obispo native, so going back to Slow High with some of my former professor or former teachers has been really nice. And then also the referral process. So you can have this blanket, you know, QPR, mental health first aid training, but it's not always an easy, you know, 1, 2, 3 step. It changes depending on the person, of course, and you want to be personable when you're speaking with somebody. And so, you know, teaching on the referral process how to tastefully manage that situation and get them to the right resources and make sure the counseling is looped in, make sure the parents are looped into the conversations as well. So that's something that we're facilitating the process of. And also parents. So a school community isn't just our students. It has a pretty far rhetorical impact and meaning-making impact in our community. So not only are we doing administration, faculty, educators, but the parents as well. It's often hard to get a lot of parents in at one moment, but hopefully next week we can really help out with that. But presentations, trainings, providing resources to parents whenever we can, whether that be in the newsletter, the letters to parents through the website, but making sure that we're reaching the parents as well, and not only for educating on their children, but for each other. I think it's a really great opportunity to learn how to talk to your neighbor or someone at the gym, for example. So not just protecting our youth, but also all populations. And then, of course, our darling students. It's been really great. I sat in on a panel before with Mindful Slow. We also do QPR presentations for students, and then education. We have a Mental Health 101 program that the county has, and so I've been going into some classrooms doing that as well. So another part of what this program, the suicide prevention program with the county is doing, is a suicide prevention and mental health training. So it's been pretty great. I've been working with the Learning Development Center to bring a free training once a year to do mental health first aid. So we've already trained a lot of people from Parks and Rec, DSS, so the Department of Social Services, and County Clerk. So we've had a lot of different departments within the county come and take this training, and it's just another way that we're preparing people to have those, you know, in the moment of crisis tools to get someone to more appropriate help. And we've had a lot of really great feedback so far, so we're looking forward to doing more of those. So earlier you were asking about Cal Poly and trainings with QPR. So it's been pretty great. I, along with one of my colleagues, our college wellness coordinator, we trained, I think it was around 300 RA staff for the dorms in QPR. Yeah, and then with another one of my colleagues, we did mental health first aid for Cal Poly Pulse, which are student mental health advocates on campus. And so we are expanding the reach there, which is really nice. And they're also on Cuesta College. Our college wellness coordinator is doing a lot of QPR trainings there. So, and I know that Transitions Mental Health is in northern Santa Barbara County, so they're doing Hancock College, so the reach is pretty vast there. And yeah, like I said, the county behavioral health department, we also provide mental health first aid training for them. So we're really just trying to prepare people and arm them with a great toolbox when it comes to mental health first aid. So the ASSIST training is applied intervention suicide skills training. I'm not going to get too much into that since Megan already covered it, but that is something that's available in the county twice a year. Transitions Mental Health provides that. And then what is mental health first aid? Again, it's that eight-hour training that Megan spoke about earlier, but it can be tailored to youth and adults. So those are the two main core classes. And then within that, there's different modules for older adults. They're coming out with an opioid safety module. There's one for firefighters, public safety, armies, and veteran. Army, active military, and veteran. And then it's also available in English and Spanish. So we do have one individual within our department. Oops. That is certified for that. And I'll just move over here. Okay, so outreach. I am in the prevention and outreach division. So along with kind of this back-end research, we also go out in the community a lot. So we've been to San Luis Obispo Farmers Market and the Templeton Farmers Market. The Community Connection is an event that's held quarterly. It's sponsored by the Veterans Services Office. That's where it used to be MASH and Step Down, I think it was called. And so now it really goes out, and they serve a lot of people who are experiencing homelessness, who might not always have access to care. And the Community Connection is great. People can get their flu shot there, their eyes checked, their IDs printed from the DMV. And then we're there tabling, promoting our services. So the county provides a lot of services to people who are underinsured or don't have insurance. And so the same thing with Journey of Hope. The county was partners with that. TEMA was the, Transitions Mental Health was the main organization that put that on, but we were tabling there again. So reaching community members at different areas. The Journey of Hope is at New Life Church in Pismo Beach. So it's really nice to, you know, we're here like in the church and we're also in the community. Talking to veterans, so we really have a nice wide reach there. Outreach also includes resources. So when I first started this position, I contacted a lot of our youth clinics around the county, and like, do you have SLO hotline cards? Do you have pamphlets just on mental health promotion and education? And a lot of them didn't, and so it's been really great, you know, partnering even within my own department and reaching out to making sure that people have access to resources. What's really nice is everything we do have is available in English and Spanish, and so I'm able to provide that for everybody as well. And then, as I mentioned earlier, again, the Suicide Prevention Forum, which we're excited about, is coming this October. So a little what else I do is data collection. So really it's data gathering, as I'm not the one initially collecting the raw data. But the purpose of this really is to help understand the scope of the problem, identify the at-risk populations, and help it form a strategic plan. So we don't want to look at an individual as a statistic, but it does help when it comes to certain funding opportunities to allocate funds to different programs. So over the past 12 years, as you can see up there, the suicide death rate has increased. It's gone up and down more or less, but it's been increasing slowly in California, also in our county and our nation. Just to put into perspective, from 2008 to 2017, there were two times as many suicide deaths than opioid-related deaths in the county. Sometimes they overlap a little bit. We don't always understand the full capacity of how someone dies from an overdose. But I just wanted to put that in perspective. We often talk about opioids a lot and comfortably and commonly, but not as much suicide. So I just wanted to bring that to everybody's attention. Another area that I've looked at, like I mentioned before, are the veterans population. So in 2017, veterans accounted for 6% of the population, but 30% of the suicide deaths. So this is incredibly disproportionate to the representation here on the Central Coast. What I do with this data also is bringing it back to the council and informing the council. So as we form our strategic plan, we can think of ways that the community can come together and help different populations. This is a little hard to see with the lighting, but this is just the demographic difference when it comes to age. And so we can see that there's been a really high increase in the older adult and just 61. Oh. All right, mood lighting. I got it. Thank you. So from 36 to 60 in 2005, you can see that's really decreased. And so as people are leaving the workforce, it's harder for us to reach them. When you're in a school or you're in your job every day, we can reach you that way. But after that, you're not showing up regularly necessarily to a job or something. So learning strategies to identify these individuals and get them access to help. So looking forward, which is what I am doing in this position, is really building our countywide suicide prevention strategic plan. Again, as I mentioned earlier, going to the schools and doing that annual review of their strategic plan. Was it effective from the year before? Is there something that we didn't have? Is there something that we missed? What else can we do? Also, the suicide prevention program specific to high-risk individuals and their families. So how can we train really, you know, the common individual to identify someone that's at risk and get them to help? We also need more access to mental health care and psychiatric facilities in this county. The PUF, or the psychiatric health facility we have now, if you have insurance, you can't go there. You have to be shipped out of county. For youth, we don't have anywhere. You always have to go out of county. And so the danger and the impact that has is you're leaving your support network when you leave the county. And that facility might not always be able to monitor afterwards the safety plan and the discharge plan. So this is probably old news to everybody, but it's just something that we really need to pay more attention to and that we need in our county is more access to that mental health care and the psychiatric unit. With that said, the crisis stabilization unit that's been recently added to our county has been very effective and beneficial, and people with or without insurance can go there, so it's been really nice having that. But it is for people who are 18 or over. And again, continued collaboration, community education, and awareness. I think that it starts with awareness and compassion and empathy, and then, you know, we can really do a lot with that if people, you know, learn those skills as well. And then research and advocacy is more of a personal passion of mine, but something that we can all really advocate for as well. So thank you so much for having me. And I'm sure there's questions for
thank
a lot
you
of
for
us
being
here.
So, Amy and Anna, do you want, you both want to stay up here, and then you won't have to jump up and sit down and jump, okay? And let's start at my left. Gina, do you have any questions?
This is for Anna, and I'm sorry for your loss.
I have a question for you. Now, when your son committed suicide, how many years ago was it?
It was February of 2016, so just
2016. The reason I'm asking is that was he ever, as a provider, when we see pediatric patients, used to be, at least 3 years ago, we weren't really screening them for depression. Mm-hmm. We do for every adult patient who's coming in for preventive care, mm-hmm. we ask screen for depression every single time. If they say yes on any of them, we dove right in. With the pediatric, we just started doing that in the last 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Thomas, when he was younger, mm-hmm. when he, you know, how many times did we see them in a clinic, but we never asked them if they were ever depressed. Mm-hmm. Now, in your opinion, if now we are asking, mm-hmm. would that help them? If it was early detection, 11 years and older, we ask what we call mm-hmm. a PHQ question, which is a patient health questionnaire. Mm-hmm. And we do that for 11 and older now.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it would help, and I think kids now have a better understanding of that term. Depression, anxiety, stress, then certainly was in the larger vocabulary of kids 3 years ago, yeah.
So since you have this forum, what would you want pediatricians or all of our healthcare providers, when you bring your child, mm-hmm. what do you want us to pay attention to?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, because kids tend to hear certain questions from their parents, but if a pediatrician or if a doctor said, how is your sleep? How is your diet? You know, how do you have friends? You know, the kinds of questions that without saying, are you depressed, you can mm-hmm. sort of start, what do you do for fun or interest? Mm-hmm. You know, I think those guiding questions are going to be more telling to a medical provider, you know, mental health or medical provider, then are you depressed? Mm-hmm. You know, you can build up to that question is what I'm saying.
And I think one thing on that day, Anna was not at all thinking Tomas was going to take mm-hmm. his life that day. It wasn't why I was there. Mm-hmm. It was not something that ever went through her mind. Like, that day, it was like it, and still to this day, it really is mind-boggling to us, because mm-hmm. we were all together, and mm-hmm. it wasn't something, even now, as, you know, we've been both in grief counseling since then. I mean, Hospice of San Luis Obispo is phenomenal. But, yeah. I think the things you're asking are such great questions, because some of the things we've been asking, those same questions, what was it that Tomas could have had, even just trying to get out of the car to walk onto campus, what would have made it a little bit easier? And some of the things we've been identifying, we just recently were really working with DLAC and the ELAC organizations on campus. Our schools are doing amazing things, such as just even meeting the kids at the curb when they're getting out of the car, seeing them. And that's something we thought for Tomas that he really needed. He needed somebody that he could be seen by. And that's what we're working with the kids. And you know, teenagers are teenagers. Sometimes that person might not be in your group, or you really don't want to connect with that person. So we started one of our initial campaigns. We just put posters up that just said, smile. And it's not that you're needing to prove that you're happy. It's just saying that research says by just smiling at somebody, you don't have to use any words, that could even turn somebody's whole day around. Or if somebody is thinking about taking their life, just even the fact that somebody saw them. And we can all remember to do that. So our dream was, and we even mentioned this to the mayor, is putting on the side of the SLO County buses, smile. Or just connect, because that could make those simple little things can make a huge difference. So providers, just asking those questions Anna was saying, that's letting that child know you see them.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, everybody, for being here. This has been very helpful to hear as a commission, and thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I don't have really questions, but just a few comments. The Harvard's Making Caring Common project, it's interesting that that's what you sort of laid the foundation around to what you began. I actually I'm a social worker by training, and a good friend and colleague of mine is actually a therapist at Harvard. And was recently speaking to her about the students that she sees, and she said that they're incredibly overwhelmed. Yes. And that there is a true mental health crisis on college campuses across the nation. Mm-hmm. And that she's constantly doing suicide assessments, mm-hmm. and it is around sort of this anxiety and the expectations that are set for these students who finally are able to achieve this lifelong goal mm-hmm. of getting into Harvard, and then they're there and don't have the social emotional skills, mm-hmm. As you said. Mm-hmm. So that resonated with me, because I was just having this conversation with her about mm-hmm. it. And so imagine if you did develop those social emotional skills. It does start in preschool. I have a daughter who's in preschool. I was very sort of focused on making sure she was at a preschool that was play-based, that mm-hmm. that talked about, you know, that really emphasized social emotional, figured academics will come later. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that is true. I think you mm-hmm. see that in preschool and elementary school, but it does get lost around junior high and high school, mm-hmm. Right when they're about to take this really big mm-hmm. adult step going on to college. I just think that the event you'll be holding in about a week or so, mm-hmm.
next Wednesday,
is awesome. I would actually love to attend and see, and wanted to just find out how you're getting the word out for that event, and whether or not, especially for parents who may want to be there but can't be there, they may have multiple kids, they may still be at work, how you might be able to share what happened at that event. So just curious about that, whether you plan to do a Facebook Live while the event is happening or sharing on any of the social media forums that exist.
Those are great comments. I think all those things, especially as we're piloting this. Mm-hmm. And that goes back to what you've said in regards to the Making Caring Common Project. Our programs were endorsed just last summer because what we're doing here in San Luis Obispo is very different. So we have an opportunity as a city and as a county to really kind of pilot these, and Harvard really wants us to. But it's just being able to access and be able to share what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And getting to the people, like you're saying, that can't be there is exactly why we began our website and is exactly why we started our letters, because Anna and Patrick were really struggling with Tomas at home. And sometimes you really don't want to share because you want to keep the privacy for your child, whether it's maybe you don't want to tell a grandparent or an aunt or uncle, because you don't want them to think twice about you want them to have, you don't want them to be clouded in mm-hmm. the way that they might interact, just like we all are so careful with labeling. And that's why we've been wanting to reduce not that stigma, because I think stigma is such a powerful word, but have it be more of a conversation where talking about depression and anxiety is a lot more common. Mm-hmm. All of us struggle at different times, or at least we know of somebody that does. Mm-hmm. So I think we will put a lot of those, that's an idea. The only issue with that would be the student panel. Mm-hmm. One thing I know for sure is we were going to write about it and make sure that a lot of parents know about it that way. But we can be creative. We're very creative at thinking of new mm-hmm. ways to reach out.
Yeah, and we have talked with Morro Bay and Loams. We will be working with their counselors to do the same survey at mm-hmm. Morro Bay High School. So we will be hoping to do another what we wish our parents understood on the coast for coastal parents. Mm-hmm. And again, how we shape that event will come be determined by what those students are interested in.
Next week, we actually are providing childcare so that parents that do have children can come, and we have our FNL staff, so the Friday Night Live coordinator is working with her students. A lot of them are in Tiny Tigers, so we have that. The benefit of partnerships as well is we have the Black and Gold Club, and they're providing food and refreshments. So we're trying to break down a lot of those barriers that, you know, you get home from work, you have your kids, you have to feed them. So we're trying to get all of that there. But we were talking about how to publicize it more. And so moving forward, we're going to be definitely open to ideas and collaboration. And we also have translation into Spanish as well. So opening it up to as many parents as possible.
Yeah, I think being able to get the word out that there is childcare, that mm-hmm. there will be Spanish translation, mm-hmm. Will be really important in driving more parents to go, because they really need to hear from kids. KSBY, there are Facebook mom groups for the county that have thousands of members. You should definitely
research some of those in the next couple of days.
Do you have a limit as to how many can come?
Wouldn't that be just an amazing problem to have?
Yeah.
I think, like, Anna and I were like, be honored if just five people came, because those five people then will tell five more, and that's kind of the way, because we've always wanted it to be like someone sitting around our island. And that's the way Anna and I do things, is it's relationship-based. People need to feel safe. So even as we've been designing our evening, we've wanted it to be warm, because it's brave for a parent to come. Mm-hmm. We even decided not to do breakout sessions because we wanted people still to feel anonymous. And because when you show up, are you saying that you have a depressed teen or an anxious teen? And what we're saying is, no, you're showing up just because you want to hear what the conversation is. And I think for all of us, it's just making things as comfortable. It's relationship-based. And I think we've moved so far away from that in our world. And that's the other thing. I came back to San Luis. Anna is moved to San Luis Obispo. It is the most amazing place to live, and we are so grateful, but it doesn't mean we don't have any of the same issues anyone else does. And I think that's why Harvard is so interested in what we're doing, because we can show others, we can be a beneficiary, we can share with other counties and other cities, look at what we're willing to show you. We still have issues ourselves, but how do we work together, and how do we learn from what the successes are of Australia? How do we learn from the successes of other universities? And this is for our kids, you know? It's for our kids and ourselves.
Thank you.
So just a comment on your comment that you were making about it's so important for the kids that when they're going to school. In our family moved, because it was so expensive here, to Sacramento a couple of years ago, and it was hardest for the oldest one, who is actually in elementary school yet, to make the transition. But one of the really great things is they have the most wonderful principal at mm-hmm. their school. It's a large school, over 1,000 kids in an elementary school. That principal is right there every single morning, mm-hmm. where every kid has to pass to get mm-hmm. through the gate. And he knows at least 800 names of the 1,000 mm-hmm. that are there. But he makes that connection, and that's so important for even kids at that age, that, you know, social, emotional connection. And then sometimes it's those little things that we don't know about.
And it doesn't cost any money. It's just saying, and the same thing goes for all of us, you know, just to see somebody. Mm-hmm. But and again, that made your move and your the students that began that school all of a sudden feel like I've been seen.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was hardest for the oldest one. I think he had a little anxiety, but they had a good school counselor. Mm-hmm. It's doing great. Jean?
Thank you for all your information. I work at a hospital here in town, cardiac rehab, mm-hmm. so talking about life transitions and health changes, mm-hmm. huge, and I noticed in your statistics that the population 61 and above, mm-hmm. half of the suicides, so yeah. we need to make sure we hit that population. And I know when I visit the patients in the hospital, mm-hmm. the question I ask is, where would you go if you have a problem? Who do you go for support? Because that gives me some information. And we do screening things mm-hmm. for depression when they come in through the cardiac rehab program. So we're capturing that population. But anytime someone has a health change, those are the times, big red flags that we need yeah. to ask where they get their support.
Yeah, and especially working with the hospitals, you know, about 70% of people that have died by suicide nationally have seen either their general practitioner or had been in the emergency room. So I'm glad that you brought that up, because it is very beneficial to be asking these questions there.
Alyssa, I was curious. I've been sitting here for the last 20 minutes looking at your pie charts.
Yes.
They're fascinating. And it looks like in general there's a shift to older age all around the perimeter of this chart. You mentioned that people are moving out of jobs into more isolated, I guess, lives. Is that the current thinking about why this shift? Are there other possible causes that are being considered?
With the understanding that there's not a single cause
sure.
to suicide, we know there's somewhat isolation, maybe the cost of living as well, as you know, maybe you become more on a limited budget with Social Security and your lifestyle. I think not having, like, isolation maybe from work, as well, and I developing health issues. A lot of the times when people either receive a terminal illness or have a chronic illness that will wear on someone over a long period of time, we tend to see that, you know, in later adulthood than younger adulthood. So there's multiple reasons, really, and it's kind of an unfortunate, perfect cocktail once you get to that older age and you have more maybe access to means, for example. We also find that older adults are less impulsive than youth, and so maybe their plans are thought out for a longer period of time. Again, not a single cause, but trying to look at all the different pieces of that puzzle.
And I think you mentioned that here in the county, at least, we don't have adequate data on the LGBTQ folks?
Correct. The county partnered with Professor Dr. J. Bitter Garcia from Cal Poly. I don't know if you're familiar with her or with them. But they just recently did a pretty, about a year and a half long data collection. And so we're starting to find out more information about ideation and attempt data. So it's not ready yet. They're still establishing and looking through that and refining the data. But we will soon know more about that as well.
Just briefly, are there national, national data and maybe shifts in those trends?
We do know that the transgender community, for example, are one of the highest risk communities in the United States. Here locally, for CHECS data, so the California Healthy Kids Survey data, about 48% of people, or of the people that identify, youth that identify as LGBTQ+, about 48% of them had seriously considered suicide. So we do have that data available to us. There is work at training coroners to establish the sexual orientation and gender identity on the death certificate, and so hopefully establishing that locally as well can give us a better idea, just, you know, to have that death with dignity and as well have the representation in our data to help advocate for them as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Thanks to everyone for being here. It's been really great to hear such a great combination of groups. One question I guess I have for mostly you, Anna and Carrie, what can we do to help you more? Like, what do you all need? Do you have a wish list?
I think Anna has wanted somebody to ask her that from the very beginning, because we have, I'm speaking for you before we start to cry, because I think that's been the hardest part, is she's willing to do anything and everything, and I think we've been like salmon going upstream, and we understand it's a scary thing to kind of change or to really bring on possibly new ideas. But the ideas can change lives, all of our lives, not just our kids. So I'm going to let her answer that. I just want to say thank you very much for asking that of her.
Well, one of the things that I have heard other communities do is to have some kind of center, and it could be, like, there are a lot of schools now who have medical wellness centers close, if not attached to, and like in Oakland and some areas where they have high need, you know, you can get your child immunized or you can seek whatever services right there, and it's easy. For this community, I always thought it'd be fabulous to have a student center for learning health and well-being, where there are resources there, be they counselors, people resources, or just, you know, books, or, you know, people that, you know, you can hang out after school, get homework help, but also get counseling and peer support. I know that counselors we've spoken to want to do groups. You know, they see a lot of teen girls who are really struggling with anxiety, or they have kids whose parents are going through a divorce, and there's power in getting those kids together to realize you're not alone. You're not the only one struggling with this. And I think Tomas really felt that he was the only one. He knew his friends had learning disabilities and were on medication or had 504, you know, plans and IEPs, but in terms of anxiety, depression, he thought he had bipolar. That was not something that was shared, and he really did think he was the only one. So somewhere where kids can be with other kids who also are like them, is, you know, and where parents can get resources and support too, accessible, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to mention one thing, and she's going to go, oh my gosh, thank goodness she said that. We've become one. Our families have become one. So sorry, we're like married couple, but we're not. So many, many, many counties across the nation and in other countries have social emotional coordinators. Mm-hmm. People that are constantly out there finding new research, new programs, because often you don't need to reinvent the wheel, but it's all about sharing, and it's all about, okay, what can we do? So that has been number one, is when you have a coordinator, somebody that is almost like the curator of all this amazing curriculum, and also has worked so hard on the relationship part of it. Like QPR, which is a nationwide program, maybe, is it international?
QPR is nationwide, Mental Health First Aid's international.
Right, like how effective that becomes when, it's becoming more effective because Anna and I have been really doing a lot of work with the teachers and the staff to say, this is why it's important. It's not just a program coming in, it's like almost like we've become these beautiful little, not gatekeepers, but they're watching and they're trusting. The relationship is being built. The conversation is being built. We aren't just being placed somewhere, and we're not just telling a teacher, you need to work harder, we have something else for you to do. We're speaking their language. We're coming to them as educators. We're kind of bridging the gap. And what we've noticed is we're forming these relationships, which it is. It's all about relationships. So a social-emotional coordinator, and that can go countywide. And we're connecting even the professionals that are coming in our panel that we reached out to. We've been very careful, too, just as not everybody can teach. Everybody has the opportunity to be a great teacher, but we need tools and resources. Mm-hmm. But some of these professionals that we reached out to, one in particular, she was like, thank you. Because I am such a proponent of social emotional health and learning, and have wondered why it's not in our schools. And I've even gone to the state of California, the Department of Education within here, saying, how can I help my district understand how important this is? So that is the second thing that I can really see us, is Anna and I are working very strongly with policy. We've been collaborating and working with Cal Poly, trying to communicate what we're doing, and to say, because they're seeing it, like, okay, how is it that we are, as a community or county, can tell the state of California and tell the nation, this is what we need. Our students are struggling. Our families are struggling. We want to make it better, and this is how we're doing it, and we're seeing results. So if that awesome. Answers your question.
Yes, I wish I could wave a wand and make it happen, but it sounds like a position that would synergize so well with what you're doing, so let's do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I also want to say thank you so much for your words in your newsletters tonight, obviously. They're so meaningful, and there's something that I know that I use and that other parents have told me that they use, so your work is really not...
Thank you.
You know, it's going places, and I've heard it from multiple people. It's really great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And there's something, Anna and I have been doing this. Anna, in particular, we both don't work now. We have completely been doing this and doing it on our own backs. And we're not a nonprofit even. This is just Anna and I. And so we have faith. that we can make magic happen for our community because it's the right thing. It's the right thing. So.
Anna and Carrie, I first of all would like to give you my great sympathy, both of you.
Thank you.
I also would like to give you my great admiration. I want to acknowledge and honor this great relationship that you've built. Everyone who has gone through this type of an event should have mm-hmm. a friend like Carrie.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Your story has touched me. I, too, also lost a Tomas. I want to honor that you are finding some meaning in this tragedy and that you're working to prevent this mm-hmm. from happening to another family.
That's the hope.
Every little step that you take, and I honor that.
Thank you very much.
I like I love the multi-pronged approach that you're going through, and I like this stressing the positivity. Mm-hmm. I think kids need to get a whole lot more of that right now. There's a lot of negativity. There's a lot of garbage out there.
Mm-hmm.
I hope for the future that you have much good luck with this and much good health.
Mm-hmm.
Your whole family.
Mm-hmm.
Alicia, I appreciate your enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. I think we have a long way to go to dispel the stigma mm-hmm. Surrounding this, but I know that just in the last 20 years, the conversations mm-hmm. across the table within the families, mm-hmm. It's bringing it out of the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be a generation where they wouldn't speak of it. It's not mm-hmm. something that families would talk about. Mm-hmm. It was hidden. Mm-hmm. And so these kinds of events and these kinds of evenings that you've given us mm-hmm. Really help, I think, to and so I honor your commitment to your work. It's a wonderful thing you're doing.
Thank
all
you.
Of you. And I want to thank you.
Thank you.
So again, to all of you, thank you for coming. I think we might like to hear from you again in a few months or certainly a year from now or whatever. So please, you know, keep us informed and up to date with what you're doing. Good luck with your event. You may not have many at this first, but I think if you were to do it again, you will at some point have that problem of finding enough room for everybody to be there. So
wouldn't that be wonderful?
It will, I'm sure.
It will be a blessing,
so,
yes.
Good. Mm-hmm. All right. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
So Dr. Bornstein is on vacation this week, so we don't have health officer report for this evening. So I think we will go ahead and go right into health commissioner updates. Let's start on the left. Gina, do you have anything?
Not at this time, no. Thanks.
Tamar?
No.
Jean?
I believe you're going to be reporting on the program that we attended.
I'll talk a little bit about that.
Yes. Then other than that, no report.
Okay. Commissioner Campbell?
Well, I have the same report every month, and that's on the dust abatement order from the Oceano Dunes. It's actually starting to move. The stipulated agreement became fact, I think, in April of last year. The first thing that State Parks had to do was to fence off and put straw bales in an area that had previously been designated areas that had previously been vegetated, and get that done immediately. And the preliminary data they have, and we have to emphasize preliminary, is that reduced the particulate matter downwind by 22%. And so by design, it looks like they're moving you know, in the right direction and have good data to work with. State Parks released, I think, a month ago, their first supposedly encompassing four-year plan. It turned out to be very, very vague and more of an outline than an actual plan, which may have been strategic. So that began a series of submission of plans to the air pollution control officer, who will make his recommendations, and then CS State Parks will modify their plan. We're still talking just about plans right now, mm-hmm. to live up to that. And eventually, by I think the end of May, they'll get to a point where State Parks has to either accept the plan and start working on it, or it goes back to the hearing board. But right now, it looks like a good process, actually. It's a complicated thing they're trying to do, and I think this series of iterative plans is good. And in the end, I think it's going to require that the air pollution control officer and his board ride this process hard. And if they do, I think it's going to work. It's encouraging.
Well, thank you for sticking with that and keeping us updated. Candace?
Yes, I attended the Opioid Safety Coalition meeting last week. We had a presentation from a new nonprofit organization called Slo County Recovery Support Network. They staff a 24-hour addiction hotline, one for men, one for women, and they do outreach at hospitals, homeless centers, peer-to-peer support. They will board animals for people if they want to go into treatment, because that can be a really big barrier to people that need to go into recovery to find a place for their pet. So they do all kinds of different things. They're from people that are in recovery currently, so it was pretty exciting to have them come and present. And then we also had a presentation on the jail. The Syringe Exchange Program has been partnering with the jail to do naloxone and overdose prevention trainings so that the inmates that get trained receive naloxone upon release. And we were able to get, the Syringe Exchange was able to get doses of naloxone from the DHCS, and Syringe Exchange volunteers were cleared to go into the jail, and we've placed 270 kits now on property for folks, so they'll have those available when they are released. And this, as you know, is a really high-risk population, so it's great. We're hoping to increase that number to like 90 a month in the coming 6 months, so that was exciting. And my student gave a great presentation, so that was exciting as well. In addition, there's an event that we heard about at the coalition, and that is there's an author coming to the library who wrote a book called Hey Kiddo, How I Lost My Mother, Found My Father, and Dealt with Family Addiction. So it's an event targeted towards kids, talking about addiction and recovery and loss at the library on April 10th at 6:30. And they're going to have a book discussion associated with
that. That's the San Luis Library.
At the San Luis Library. Yes, thank you. And I think that was it from the Opioid Safety Coalition.
Thank you. Catherine?
Working with the grant review, mm-hmm. and I have a Oral Health Coalition meeting coming up the first week of April, I think April 2nd.
Okay, that's good. All right. So
Heal Slow met last month, actually. They it was very well attended. They focused on the second of their four areas, and we had a panel discussion about wellness in the workplace and what some of our employers, including our county, are doing to promote wellness for their employees. And there was a speaker from Mind Body there, and then Wendy was there from California First Five. But the room was packed. Amy was there, and somebody else was there from our group. Well, I guess Kathleen Carley, I see her a lot, and she's practically one of our group, right? So, but it was Dr. Bornstein was there as well. There were a lot of community members there, and it was a pretty good discussion among everybody. Some good questions in that came out. The other thing that I attended along with Jean and Amy also attended was the California Alliance for Preventive Funding, which is it's done in a few states, not in California. It was kind of a convening of getting to know what it's all about, what the process is, what you can do for it. It was a very interesting presentation. Actually, it was we did it along with Santa Barbara County and Monterey County, so it was good to see the regionalization of everything there. And there's a lot of education that needs to be done about what it is and what we can, how we can all participate. And I volunteered the Health Commission to take on some of the educational things about it. So I have some handouts that they gave us there that day that I'll share with all of you. They have a great website and all kinds of things on there as well. I think the first thing we need to do is probably program them to come and talk to all of us so that we understand what it is, what the benefits to a community are. The entire county was really represented at the meeting itself. Supervisor Gibson was there and gave a really great welcoming message. Mayor Harmon was there from SLO as well. There were representatives there from Senator Monning's office and some of our other local representatives. So it was a good program. I think it was certainly educational for all of us to learn about what we can do with this. It's not something we're going to have happen in the next week or so. It's going to, you know, be an ongoing process. And so I said, well, I know the Health Commission, we talked about doing a long-term project or advocate for something, and this would be an advocacy role that we would take with that. So I think if it's okay with everybody, we'll try to program, get that on schedule so that we can learn more about it and see how we can be helpful in promoting this. Okay, good. All right, then...
I just want to add that maybe we can do it for next month, rearrange things while it's still an active. Do you think they'd come back
and present? I'm not sure. We can check. But when's Dr. Bornstein back from her vacation? Is that next week? Okay. Yeah, let's maybe...
Investigate
and whatever. So within the next month or so, though, I think it probably would be good to have them here.
Because it's really like healthcare is very important to focus on prevention, mm-hmm. and that's something that doesn't get enough money, and we need to focus on maybe making sure that can happen within our community.
And just look at all the things that we heard this evening that could fall into that category of prevention and that. So good. Okay. Committee reports, and I know we have a nominating committee report, but before we get to that, on the legislative side, there are five bills that have been brought forth in our state legislature that have to do with sugary drinks. So, and it's very early on. The bills have just been presented. They haven't gone through committee or anything. But I was thinking we really need to keep track of those and take a look at them. At the prevention meeting, I sat with one of Senator Monning's assistants, and so she actually agreed to try and find a speaker for us that could come and tell us how these bills differ. And it's not just soda at this point. It's all sugary drinks, whether it's vitamin water with sugar in it, whether it's, you know, a Star. Cup like that of whatever. So let's, you know, take a look and see what they have there. We'll try to keep track of those bills and where they're going. And then maybe, again, an advocacy role with a letter of support for some of those might be in order for us. Any other of our standing committees need to report? Jean, I think nominating committee is going to report, right?
Yes, the nominating committee met and have a recommendation for appointing Amy Kleinman, who is in the audience. So glad you joined us. To the County Health Commission, pending final approval from the County Board of Supervisors. And we are also going to be interviewing another person that's applied this Friday. So hopefully we'll have another person to add to the Health Commission. Amy, you want to stand up, and hopefully you'll be joining us soon.
Thanks for being here, Amy. So I need a motion to accept the recommendation of the nominating committee.
Motion to accept the recommendation of the nominating committee. Can I do that since I'm
You on can,
that?
Yes.
I second the motion.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we accept the recommendation of the nominating committee and ask the Board of Supervisors for an appointment for Amy Kleinman to be part of the Health Commission. I think we can take a voice vote. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Yay. All right. So, Teresa, you'll send it off to the board.
Okay.
And then next month it will be official, correct? That takes about a month. Okay. Good. All right. Well, Amy, we're looking forward to having you with us. So, again, thanks for coming this evening. Does anybody else have anything else to bring up this evening? Candace.
I just have a question. Do we have representation on that suicide prevention council? Do any of us attend those meetings, the one that Alicia was talking about?
Do we have representation?
Yes.
You know, I'm not sure. No, I don't think we do. So
we should.
We should, yes. Okay, do you know when they meet?
Wednesdays, but I don't know when.
During the day or... Okay. All right. So let's see if we can find out when they meet. And then, Teresa, let's work through the process to get a representative. Would you like to do that, Candace?
I teach on Wednesdays.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. Well, we can...
Probably not. Unless it's at 6.
Oh, it's at 6 in the evening?
Unless it's at 6.
Oh, unless it's at 6. Okay. Which is probably not. You're right. So, okay. Let's find out when it does. But I think that would be great to have somebody represent us there. Okay. Anything else? All right. With that, I think we will be adjourned for the evening. Thank you all.